Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve.
So help me out by completing this phrase for me. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of... The pursuit of happiness. Very good. Do you know where that phrase comes from? Whoa, a movie. The Declaration of Independence. The pursuit of happiness. Our country is founded on it, and we are all in on the chase. I'd say it's pretty normal for us to want to be happy. Some of us are actually here today because we're in pursuit of some kind of happiness, and we're thinking maybe we're going to find it here. So we try. We try to be happy. And some of us, we buy. That's right. We buy to be happy. Whenever I was a kid, I collected Star Wars action figures. Come on now, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, Star Wars action figures. And each new Star Wars action figure that I bought made me feel what? Happy for the moment, but then the moment passed because there was always another Star Wars action figure out there waiting for me. And maybe that one's gonna make me happy. And I think I've still got those action figures somewhere, maybe. I don't think so. No. Here's another saying. The only difference between men and boys is the price of their toys. The price of their toys. So what was true for us as kids is still true for most of us as adults, isn't it? It's true. We think that that next, I don't know, choose your vice. Maybe it's a new car. We think that new car is going to make us happy. So we go to the car lot and we look and we test drive and we buy it and we drive it home and we're happy for the moment. But the moment passes and then we're looking to something else to make us happy. Well, what if I were to tell you today that most of us, we're looking for happiness in all the wrong places. And if that sounds like a song to you, that's because it is. It's looking for love in all the wrong places. And if you know that song, you are from my generation, because that's well before the 90s, Jacob Sanders. Well before the 90s. That's right, I'm going to bat for us, people. But you're not gonna be able to find happiness at Walmart. It's not going to be on a Walmart shelf. If you go to a garage sale, guess what? Nope, not going to find happiness at a garage sale. Not even going to find it on a car lot. And believe it or not, you're not going to be able to buy happiness and get it via Prime in 2 days in frustration-free packaging. Amazon is letting us down in the happiness realm. But here's what I used to know. Here's what I used to know about happiness, but I forgot somewhere along the way. Happiness is less about what and more about who. Happiness is less about what and more about who. And I think that you knew this when you were playing in the backyard as a little kid. It didn't matter what you were playing with, as long as you were playing with the right who's in your life. In elementary school, as long as you found your group of who's, it didn't matter what you had. It was who that mattered. Then middle school, high school, forget all about the what, because it became all about the who. It didn't matter what we had or what we didn't have. It didn't matter what we did. As long as whatever we did, we were doing it with our group of who's. That's what really mattered. And that was especially good for me because my parachute pants, they were from the Walmart shelf. That's right, they were. My Michael Jackson Thriller jacket with the zippers on it, it was like a 2-year-old garage sale hand-me-down. That was my, and my sparkly glove, do you guys remember the sparkly glove? Anybody? Anybody? And people are like, are those real rhinestones? No, those aren't real rhinestones. That is called Elmer's and glitter. Elmer's and glitter, but doggone it, I could sport it. And for those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about right now, you can just beat it. All right? Thank you. But somehow what was true back then is still true today. Though many of us, we've forgotten it along the way. Happiness is less about what and more about who. And personally, I had a great reminder of this past weekend when my wife and I, we flew across the country to visit our son, our daughter-in-law, and our grandkids. Yes, it is true, I am a grandpa. So true, I prefer to go by glampa, but they don't call me that. They call me Grampy. I never expected to be a Grampy, people. Believe me, I never expected that. I didn't see it coming. And honestly, I personally was really looking forward to the getaway. I was looking forward to the what. That's the deal. The getaway that was going to be the vacation that sent us across the country to visit grandkids. The vacation I was looking forward to, and I was thinking, man, that is going to make me happy. Any of you guys look forward to vacations that way? You think, oh man, if I can just hold out until vacay. And then you experience vacay, and you're happy, and then vacay's over, and you're asking, what's next, right? What's next? Why is it that we tend to forget happiness is less about what and more about who? So there I was, floating in circles on the lazy river with my granddaughter Lydia laying there on my chest. She's 2 years old. She's laying there on my chest, and I'm in a tube floating on the lazy river, and by about lap three, she falls asleep. Have you ever experienced that? It was about lap three that I realized, I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. Happiness is less about what and more about who. I had my granddaughter right there asleep on my chest. And actually, when I thought that happiness thought, I actually used the word joy. Joy is less about what and more about who. And I say joy because happiness, let's be honest, it can be kind of fleeting. Happiness is linked to happenstance. It's kind of random and unreliable. But joy is linked to relationship. Joy is rooted in love. Happiness just tends to happen. It comes over you at unpredictable moments or at a particular time, and it will go just as quickly as it came. But the joy that I experienced with my granddaughter there on my chest, especially when she fell asleep, that joy, even just sharing the experience with you today, I feel it. I feel it. That happiness kind of transitioned and made its way into joy. Was I happy to be there with her? Duh. Of course I was happy. Was I happy to be able to like hold her there as she slept and I put my head up against her warm head and I could actually smell the scent of the coconut tear-free shampoo that her mother had apparently bathed her in? I could smell that. Was I happy in that moment? Yeah, I was happy. Was I happy when on about, I don't know, probably lap eight or nine, she's sleeping there and I'm holding her and all of a sudden I feel this steamy warmth soaking into my swim trunks and filling the hole that my bottom was resting in with the water. It was all becoming very, very warm. Was I happy when my granddaughter was peeing on me? Oh yeah, I was happy. I was happy. I thought, I am never going to forget this moment. Even then, I was happy. Now, in my last teaching, the last time I was on this stage, I shared with you guys how when my wife and I brought our oldest son home from the hospital when he was born, he poopied in my hand. Now, I'm floating around the lazy river with his daughter, who's 2 years old, on my chest, and she pees on me? I gotta be thinking like father, like daughter. That's the deal there, like father, like daughter. Man, but that happiness wasn't fleeting like our laughter in these moments when we share stuff like that. That happiness was deeper. It was rooted in the who that is my granddaughter. It's born out of love. That happiness crossed the threshold into the realm of joy. And joy is less about what and more about who. You could say that joy will always involve a who or two. It's true, I tell you. It's true indeed. Stay with me, listen closely, and you will see. It's never one all alone, always two, three, or four, because joy can't fly solo. No, joy cries, more, more, more. Joy is less about what and more about who. True joy will always involve a who or two. And why is that? Actually, I believe that it's always been that way. Since the beginning of time, at the creation of all things, God is the one who realized this. And I think it's kind of surprising when I read it myself, but he had created all sorts of whats and placed them in the garden. And each time he created a what, he'd be like, "Ooh, that's good." He'd create another what, be like, "That's so good. Did you guys see that?" And he created another what, he'd be like, "That's so, so, so good." Until he broke his streak of attaboys that he was giving himself. That's good. And he broke the streak by saying, "Whoa, that is not good." Well, what? What wasn't good? Well, the one who that God had created and placed in the garden, his name is Adam, surrounded by all sorts of brand new whats in the garden, he had no whos, no other whos to do life with. You might say, well, and I've heard this argument before, you might say, Adam in the garden had the greatest who of all time to do life with. It was God himself. But what if I were to tell you that God is not enough for you? I can tell by the look on your face that I better not tell you that. So it's a good thing that God told us that. He said, "It is not good for the man to be alone." God alone is not enough. Not enough for you, not enough for me, not enough for any of us. The who that is you needs other who's too. It's true. It's true. I could Dr. Seuss this all day long, but I think I better stop. It's kind of losing its pizzazz, you know? But God knew it way back in the beginning, and I think that most of us here today, we would agree that joy is less about what and more about who. Most of us would agree, which brings me to my question, why? Why, if we all believe that, why do we buy into the lie that our happiness, that our joy is linked to a what? Actually, I think that the reason that we tend to drift back into what is actually linked to an unnamed who that makes an appearance in that original story of Adam in the garden all alone. God says, "It is not good for the man to be alone." So God causes Adam to fall into a deep sleep. And God reaches into Adam's side and he takes a rib from Adam's side and he fashions woman. And he wakes Adam. I can just picture this. Adam's waking up from his deep sleep. He's, "Oh, what's going on there?" He wakes up and he opens his eyes to God's presentation of Adam's new partner. And Adam unknowingly names her in that moment with the, "Whoa, man." He is like very impressed with what God has fashioned here. And actually, he didn't name her Woe Man. She's called Woman, but he gives her the name Eve. Now remember, I said the reason why we tend to drift back into what is linked to an unnamed who in the garden. So I wasn't speaking of Eve. She's a named who. The unnamed who actually makes his official appearance in the very next chapter, which would be Genesis chapter 3. Now, Adam and Eve in the garden, they were surrounded by all of the whats that God had placed in the garden with them, and they found their joy not in the whats, but they found their joy in the who. Adam finding joy in Eve, Eve finding joy in Adam, and the two of them, the man and the woman, finding joy in the great who, finding joy in God. Now, there was a particular what in the garden that God had assured Adam and Eve would bring them the extreme opposite of joy and happiness. He actually told them that eating of this particular what would ultimately result in death. Enter who number four. Again, you have Adam, you have Eve, you have God. Who number four, the author of Genesis describes as being a speaking serpent with a mouth full of lies. And Jesus will later refer to him as the father of lies. Now this who, the father of lies, assures Adam and Eve eating of that what will surely not result in death. Just the opposite. Eating of the what will make you just like the great who himself, the giver of life, just like God. And it says, when the woman saw that the what was good for food, and that the what was pleasing to the eye, and also that the what was desirable for gaining wisdom, she took hold of the what, and she ate it. She also gave some of the what to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they realized that they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the great who, God himself, as he was walking in the garden. And they hid from him behind whatever they could find. You see, she chose what over who. He chose what over who. And before we go saying what fools they were, need I remind us that we choose what over who time and time again. Why? Why do we do that? It's because we believe, just like Adam and Eve did, we believe the lie of the enemy. The lie that what will make us happy, that what will bring us joy and satisfy. But it never will, because joy is less about what and more about who. And until we realize that and remember that, we will waste our time pursuing what will never satisfy, and we'll continually be looking for what's next. There's a story of a businessman who takes an extended trip, and he finds himself sitting on the beach in a small fishing village, and as he sat, he saw a fisherman rowing his boat ashore just at sunrise. And he was astonished with the great catch of fish that this fisherman had brought in. He was so impressed that he asked him, "How long does it take you to bring in such a great catch? And the fisherman replied, oh, just a short while. The businessman said, well, then why don't you stay out at sea longer? And the fisherman said, well, I catch enough that I can sell some at the market and take the rest home to my family, and it's plenty to provide for our daily needs. And the businessman asked, well, what is it that you do with the rest of your day? And the fisherman replied, well, after fishing, I'll take part of the catch and sell it at the market. Then I'll take the rest home to my family. We'll typically enjoy breakfast together. And after breakfast, I might do some chores around the house and play with my kids. I love to play with my kids in the mornings. When afternoon arrives, my wife and I, we take a siesta together. And as the sun begins to set, she and I will stroll into the village and we'll sip wine and we'll sing and we'll dance and we'll play music on into the evening. Sometimes we stay out nearly the whole night together. The businessman sat back and stroked his chin and he said, could I give you a piece of advice, young man? Why, I've got a PhD in business management, and I see great potential in you. So from now on, you should spend more time at sea. Try to catch as many fish as possible. And what you catch, you should sell to make money. And when you have saved enough money, you should hire an extra hand. Buy a bigger boat so that you can acquire more fish throughout the day. And when you do this, you can sell these fish and you can buy multiple boats. You can set up a business right here on this island. Eventually, your business could grow such that you could move to the city away from this small fishing village. You could run an enterprise and put fishing businesses all around the island on the different shores. And the fisherman said, and what next? He said, well, what would be next is once you've grown the business to a certain size, you could actually subdivide it and you could go onto the stock market and sell pieces of it where people would be giving their money to you to run your business. You'd be making so much money. You'd be a millionaire. And the fisherman said, yes, sir. And what next? He said, well, once a business has reached such a size, you could sell it for a huge profit. You would never have to work another day in your life. And the fisherman said, and what next? He said, you could sell it for enough that you could buy yourself a small cottage outside of a nice little fishing village on an island. You could rise up early in the morning just because you wanted to, and you could go fishing just for the fun of it. And after fishing, you could go home and you could eat breakfast with your family and you could play with your grandkids on into the afternoon. And in the afternoon, you and your wife could take a siesta. And then you could stroll into the evening as the sun is setting to the village and you could sip wine and you could sing and dance and play music on into the night. You could stay out all night if you so desired. There's a phrase that many of us will hear throughout our lives. It'll come in various forms, but something like, invest your time in what's important. And it sounds like good advice, but I think that we can take that advice up a notch by changing one single word. Invest your time in who's important. That's better advice. Because time is the one what that, if leveraged properly, can actually help us to experience joy in our lives. If we can learn to manage our time wisely, investing more of it in pursuing who's and less in pursuing what's, time can help us to experience more joy in our lives. I'm going to be speaking on how we can win our battle for our time in week 3 of the series that we're kicking off next week, Fight Club, Winning at the Battles That Matter Most. And I shared in one of our experiences that it's a good thing that I'm teaching on joy today and on time a few weeks from now, because as I'm teaching on this, I'm thinking, my goodness, I forget so often that joy is less about what and more about who. I get things out of order so often. And maybe you're a little bit like me, and you do the same thing. So here are some questions that we can ask ourselves starting today if we want to begin prioritizing who's over what's so that we can experience more joy in our lives. Question number one. This is a tough one. Do I work long hours to acquire what's? Sacrificing relationships with who's in the process. Ask yourself that question. Another question. Do I busy myself watching or playing what's and then say I don't have time for activities that involve who's? Do I tinker in the garage or craft room with what's to either impress or give to who's? Sometimes actually to the detriment of my relationship with said who's. And if that's confusing for you, think about this. Do you go out and wash and wax your car? I mean, we do that oftentimes, not just to care for the car, but because we want to impress the who's in our life. So they look at our car, they're like, whoa, look at that car. Very nice. Maybe we spend time in our craft room creating homemade cards to give to people at Christmas that we'd actually rather not spend time with to begin with. Maybe we're guilty of those sorts of things. We invest our time in all sorts of what's to the detriment of our relationship with the who's. And the most important question of all is, do I truly believe that time is the most valuable what that I can invest in the who's in my life? Because until we do, we are going to experience a joy deficiency in our lives. This is true. So, along with those questions, how about some practical tips? Something that we can maybe have some application with. Practical tips might be turn off the TV. If you want to get real extreme, turn off the family Wi-Fi. What? Yeah, wouldn't that be crazy? How about turn off your phone? Set your phone to do not disturb after a certain hour. Use your vacation days. Oh, yeah, do that. Do that. Limit yourself to 40 to 50 hours a week. Parents, learn to play video games with your kids. Kids, learn to enjoy when your parents try to play video games with you. And do not mock those parents for doing so. Go on a walk together. Eat dinner together. Binge watch a favorite show together. Eat breakfast together. Do a project together. Key word, together. Join a Verve group together. Yeah, join a Verve group together. A Verve group is a group of about 6 to 16 people that get together regularly to grow in their relationship with one another and with God. And I promise you this, if you choose to join a Verve group and stick with a Verve group, your joy in life will increase, and your burdens in life will decrease. And you're like, Dave, how in the world could you possibly know that my joy would increase and my burdens will decrease? Well, I've got to tell you, it's simple Verve group mathematics, people. Check this out. Let's say that you, all by yourself, have a little bit of joy. So that's joy times one person equals... Do you know what the answer to this is? One joy. Understand? Following with me? Now, Verve Group Mathematics says that if you take that joy and you share it with one other person, if you know PEMDAS, follow with me. If you have no idea what PEMDAS is, don't worry about it. you would have J times 2 would be 2J. You have doubled your joy by sharing that joy with one other person in your life. So what about a verb group, you ask? A verb group is a group of six or more people. So you take your joy, which is yours all by yourself, and then you add five other people to that mix, and we have 6J going on, six times the joy we would have had without a verb group. It's simple verb group mathematics. And you may be asking yourself, well, Dave, what about the burdens in my life? How in the world is it going to help decrease those? I'm glad you asked, because I'm going to show you. If you were to take the burdens in your life when you're shouldering it all alone, that is B, burden, on one person's back, yours all alone equals, believe it or not, 1B. You're carrying the burden all by yourself. However, if you were to choose to take that burden that is yours all by yourself and share it with one other person in your life, all of the sudden what you end up with is one half of the burden, because somebody else is carrying the other half of the burden for you. Enter verb group mathematics. You take that burden, you share that burden not only with yourself, but with five or more other people, and you have now cut that burden down to 1/6. As I shared with you, your joy will increase and your burdens will decrease if you choose to join a verb group and stick with it. Whew, felt like an infomercial to me. But in all seriousness, if you join a verb group, your joy will increase. And it's not only because of your connection with other who's, like those around you, it's also because of your growing connection with the great who himself, God. There's a verse that paraphrased says, let us who's fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross. Now, that phrase, the joy set before him, it was an opportunity for him by taking our burden on his own back. He took our burden upon himself and carried it all by himself, the weight of the cross, in order to restore our relationship with other who's, and especially to restore all of our relationships with the great who, God himself. So as we conclude today, what we're going to do is we're going to take some time to remember that Jesus gave his life on the cross for all of us who's. And the way that we do that here each week with Verve, the band will be coming out shortly to play a song and inviting us to sing along with them. And as they do that, anybody who desires is invited to approach the candlelit tables that are located around the room. And on the table, you're going to find a cup of juice that represents Jesus' blood poured out for you. You're also going to find a piece of bread that represents his body broken under the weight of the burden of our sins. And you take that cup and you take that bread back to your seat with you. And I want to challenge you to take a moment to examine the who that is you. Take a moment to examine yourself. The burdens that you carry, the burden possibly that you have been to others in your life. And then take a moment to acknowledge who Jesus is and to acknowledge what he has accomplished on our behalf, restoring our relationship with one another and with God himself. And you may be here today and you're thinking to yourself, Dave, you have no idea what I have done in my life. There is no way that God's joy is available for me. And in response to that, I would have to ask, have you forgotten so quickly? Joy is less about what and more about who. Let's talk with God. Jesus, thank you for who you are. You are perfection. Thank you for what you have done, for what you have taken upon yourself, and that is all of our sin and all of our brokenness. Thank you, Jesus, for who you have restored us to, that being with yourself, with the Father, and with your Spirit. And thank you for what the future holds, because as long as we are journeying with you, the great who, what our future looks like is bright. Thank you for this moment that we get to sit in your presence among other who's and celebrate who you are in our lives. In the name of Jesus.